Okay, so now it's time for the Dhamma talk. So does anyone have any, because I used to be a busker, so I used to take requests. So does anybody have any requests for the Dhamma talk? Something interesting. Go on. Non-self? Non-self? Okay. Anything else? Reincarnation? Ooh. Okay, anything else? Creativity and music. Okay. Sorry? Anger management. Asking for a friend, right? Fair enough, yeah. Space and consciousness. Okay. I'm hearing all of these, and I'm trying to make a list, and I'll see if I can address these all. I'm not sure how, but anyway, go on. I'd like a challenge. Space and consciousness. Just briefly, yeah. In the Buddhist texts, we have like the five material elements. I can just answer that one very briefly. Then the fifth element is the element of space. And the element of space, interestingly enough, in Buddhism is always regarded as relative to the other elements. So it's not something that exists independently. So space is essentially something that happens in the distance between other elements rather than something which exists of itself. And this is something that Buddhist philosophers argued about a lot, but that's the basic idea. And consciousness is regarded also as an element in the sense that so this is that idea that awareness is one of the fundamental properties of the universe and of reality. And of course this is something which is argued in interpretation of quantum theory is how fundamental is consciousness regarded in terms of the physical universe. But from a Buddhist point of view, it is regarded as a fundamental element. Yeah. So yes, other questions? Requests or suggestions?
Addiction.
Addiction to what specifically? Just again asking for a friend. Sorry. Addiction to. All right. Okay. Yeah. Anything else? Go on. Big data. Okay. That's getting more interesting. Those are really boring questions, by the way. It's like when I was a musician, like, you know, I'd do the same thing. You know, you'd ask for requests and everyone would be like, oh, sing American Pie. I'm like, oh, God, I'm never singing American Pie, right? Sing Stairway to Heaven. I'm never doing Stairway to Heaven. Just forget about it, right? So anyway, perfectly good songs, but like enough. So, okay. Big data, all right. Anything else? Go on, yeah. Our treatment of animals. Oh my goodness, yeah. Okay, anything else? Okay. The effects of technology on spirituality. Okay. So that's enough, right? Okay. Good. Got some good ones there. Okay. Well, I'll start out with something easy and simple, and hopefully move up from there. But one thing mentioned was big data. Actually, this afternoon. I had Dana at my mum's place, and I don't know if you've done this. They have this government health thing where you're supposed to, like, they all put all your health details in sort of an online database, and they seem to, I don't know much about it, but they seem to have done it without actually asking anyone. Is that right? It's opt out, right? Have you ever tried to opt out?
No, I don't
help
my
dad. Yeah. Yeah, you try to. Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. My mum said, oh, she couldn't figure out how to opt out. And I looked at it and went through it. And I'm like, yeah, no, you can't. It just goes round in loops. Yeah, it's very bad. So they're collecting all this data on everyone, right? Actually, we're collecting data on all of you guys right now. Right? Interesting. Yeah, because this is all being live streamed, right? So, and you've all got phones. So that's all the data getting there. Has anyone got smartwatches? Anyone got a smartwatch? No? Good. Don't wear a smartwatch. They're terrible. So more and more of these kinds of things, the data and so on, is being collected, right? Now, we're trying to think through the kind of some of the implications of these things, right? So what kinds of data are they collecting, right? Our location, our appearance, maybe our voices, our medical records, and those kinds of things. If we're wearing a device on our skin, right, it can measure our heartbeat. What can it measure if it knows your heartbeat, right? If you're wearing a smartwatch, right, or any kind of data, any kind of device that's measuring your heartbeat, what does that know? Well, it can know when you went to sleep and when you woke up, right? It can know when you get angry, when you go for a jog, when you have sex, when you smoke a joint, right? Right? I mean, all of these things affect your heart rate, right? It can know when you meditate. Yeah? All of these things affect your heart rate, and in principle, there's no reason why they shouldn't be knowing all of those things. You want that stuff, and all of that stuff will be collected, and all of it will be sold to whoever wants it. Do not ever expect any of your data to be private, right? Absolutely not. So it will be collected, it will all be sold to whoever wants it, and then used against you. Right? It will be used to sell you stuff that you don't want. Yeah? Now, how much of that stuff... And then, of course, it will keep going. We're just at the beginning. What's going to happen next? Well, I'll start reading your brain waves. Right? I mean, they already have devices that can read your brain waves and things like that. So you'll just have to think, oh, I'm feeling a bit peckish, and then this ad for a pizza will come up. Right? And then you'll just think, click... And then 5 minutes later, a drone will appear with a pizza. Huh? I mean, all that technology actually exists. That's not science fiction, right? That's not all the bits have been wired together yet, but basically all that stuff exists. How much of ourselves, right, are we going to upload? Right? You think about it. We're adding bits and bits and pieces of ourselves. How long do we go until actually all of ourselves is uploaded? Right? I mean, if they're reading all of our brain waves all the time, don't they just know our minds? Can't they analyze our minds and know our minds better than we do? Right? I mean, what if we get to a state where you're like, oh, you go to a restaurant and what dish should I order? And then the computer can tell you which dish you'll order based on, because it knows your mind and preferences better than you do. And you order this one, it says, no, better not. It's a bit too sour. You don't like sour. Right? Okay. If you say so, I'll do what you tell me to. And so we're gradually surrendering our autonomy, and we're surrendering our existence as individuals. And of course, this is happening more or less in different ways in different places. In China, then of course it's happening at a faster pace, and people are sharing their information. It's all gathered by the government and all used for surveillance and these kinds of things, to a degree that we can't really fathom. And all of these things are happening in systems that nobody understands, right? This also is a very important part of the whole thing, right? It's not as if Mark Zuckerberg understands how Facebook works, right? Nobody understands how Facebook works. It's just too complicated, right? People have general ideas about how certain bits of it work and things like that, but nobody understands how any of this works. And so we've surrendered our autonomy behind layer after layer after layer of programming and code and abstractions and things like that, none of which anyone actually understands. Right. So how long do we go until we've actually surrendered all of ourselves to the internet? I remember I had this moment a few years ago when, I don't know if you remember, when one of the first AI applications that came to phones was the thing they call Google Now. And it was quite clever because it would be able to, like the first time it came, I had a Dhamma talk to give, and it was like, without me doing anything about it, it sort of flashed up and said, oh, you know, you have to leave for such and such, and you better leave now because there's a bit of traffic, and so on, right? And when I saw that, two things happened. Number one, okay? Oh, three things happened. Number one, I saw, oh, that's handy. Number two, I thought, fantastic, now I'll never have to remember anything ever again. I don't have to remember any meetings. And if you've ever known me or worked with me, then you'll know that this is a big challenge that I have. In fact, I've missed two meetings in the last 2 days. I'm terrible with meetings. The worst time, shall I confess to you, the worst time I've ever missed a meeting? The worst time I ever missed a meeting was one time I was in KL. And doing some teaching or something, and I got a email. Okay, everyone, we're meeting at the Parliament coffee shop at 9 o'clock in Canberra. I'm like, guys, wasn't that next week? So we changed the date. So we actually had a meeting in Canberra at Parliament House, and there was supposed to be some talk or something on. I was supposed to be talking. guys, I'm in KL. Sorry about that. Are there any other Buddhists around? They found someone else to do it. Anyway, so yes, I'm very bad. So I was very grateful to Google. Thank you very much, Google. Now I don't have to remember meetings, right? So and then the third thing that happened was I recognized, oh yeah, that's a bit of my mind which I've just offloaded. I've just outsourced my mind to Google. I no longer have to think that. Right? You think about how that works. Right? I just caught that in the moment. If I hadn't been practicing mindfulness, you never would have recognized it. But I just saw, oh yeah, that's that moment when I'm actually, if you like, uploading a piece of myself to Google, and I'm relying on Google to be able to tell me where to go and what to do and so on. Yeah. And so this is what we do with this data and with the technology, little bit by little bit by little bit. How long do we have to go before we've uploaded our entire self? Right? We think of this as some kind of science fiction idea, right? That you can upload your brain or upload your mind to the internet and then you can live forever, right? But that's not something that's going to happen as just one thing. It's something which is happening right now. Yeah? And how long will you go before you can be replaced? Right? I mean, some of you may have been I did a talk at the Buddhist conference about, was it 3 or 4 years ago? And we did this panel on future technologies and things like that. We had a cyborg and a robotics engineer and a guy who was growing his own brain in a jar. And that was an excellent panel. And one of them was an artist called Stelak. And Stelak does this kind of thing where he'll like wire up his body and things like that and then project like a hologram or send like a robot to a conference to give a talk, so he doesn't have to do it. So he'll just like be wired up and he can give the talk from Perth and have a robot in Paris or something like that, which is actually doing it. So how long before we don't actually need our physical bodies to do these things, right? I mean, people, you know, even like now, I mean, people are sitting at home. They don't have to actually physically come here to listen to the talk. They can just sit at home in the comfort of their lounge chairs and watch the talk. So we're projecting ours, and I'm projecting myself in one way into their lounge rooms. So how long do we go before it's all gone? How long do we go before we projected all of ourselves onto the internet? And it all belongs to corporations, right? So ourself no longer belongs to us, it'll belong to corporations. Yeah? Kind of interesting. So I don't know about you, but I find this whole process to be a little bit disturbing. Yeah? But
but we keep on doing it. And one of the things that we have learned, I think, in the past few years about this is that it's not really a matter of... One of the things which is disturbing about it is it's not really a matter of choice. And I think that, like, the way that we imagined it or the way that we thought about these technologies would be that, you know, there'd be somebody offering a service. They'd be saying, you know, come into us and we'll upload your brain and then you can live forever and so on, right? But the way it works out is not quite like that. The way it works out is through addiction, right? Right? It's because we know that we really shouldn't, but we do anyway. Yeah? And we keep on using these things and we keep on using these devices, and the gains we get from them become smaller and smaller and smaller. Right? I mean, when you first got Facebook, right, it was kind of a miracle, right? And you look at it and it's like, wow, it can connect me with all these people. And all these people I didn't know, my family and friends. Oh my goodness, there's so-and-so. I haven't seen them since high school. Right? And you get this kind of buzz and you think, wow, it's amazing to have this connectivity. Yeah? Well, I didn't quite feel like that. I looked at it and said, oh my God, I don't want to see those people. I'm out of here. So that was my experience of Facebook. That's it. Then I just closed my account. So, but apparently a lot of people like all that kind of stuff. But so, right? And so the first thing, there is something magical about it, right? But then the more and more you use it, right, you think, what's the actual marginal pleasure that you get? What's the extra pleasure you get from that next Facebook post as you're scrolling through your feed? That next entry there, how much pleasure is that actually giving you? Yeah? And of course the answer is, yeah, not much. Yeah? But it's an addiction because you're addicted to that process, to scrolling, to looking, to checking your feed, to getting the likes, getting the hits, all of these kinds of things. And it's all engineered to do that, right? It's engineered to addict you, right? They went through right from the beginning and they said, how do we addict people to these things? That's what they did. And they didn't have any concern for all of the ethics, for the implications, for any of those kinds of things. They only wanted to addict people and get them using them full time. And we know this because the engineers who built this have said that's what they did. And many of them have now left those organizations and they've now come out and said, what we did was wrong. We regret it. And almost all of the big names in tech have said that they would never give these things to their children. Right? Steve Jobs would never give an iPad to his kids. Yeah? So you listen to this, kids. See? Steve Jobs would never give an iPad to the kids. Yeah? And all of these people, they say the same things. These things are addictive. And a group of the engineers who built these services have now formed an organization in America to try to combat it and try to say, actually, we made a mistake. We need to undo this. Because this is leading somewhere which is very unwholesome. And of course we've seen how this has been manipulated and abused through the recent election cycles and all kinds of things. And of course this is just the beginning. What we're seeing now is just the beginning. Yeah? And so when I see that the Australian government is now collecting all our health records and putting them in one place and collecting them online, if this had happened maybe 10 years ago, I would have thought, oh, okay. Maybe there's some advantages and disadvantages to it. Now I see it, and I think, no way. I'm going to opt out. And when I see that they don't actually let you opt out, they say they do, but I couldn't figure out how to opt out. I mean, I build websites, right? I'm not a kind of, you know, I'm not like a true geek, but I'm like a wannabe geek, right? When I say I build websites, I mean I think of ideas for websites and tell other people to build them, right? But still, I have a reasonable idea of how these things work. And you can see these things, they call them in the IT world dark patterns, right? Dark patterns, right? When it says something like that, oh yes, you can opt out. And it's clearly, it's deliberately built and engineered to make opting out as difficult as possible. Yeah. And don't have any doubt about this. That's what they did. They wanted to make it really hard for you to opt out. Yeah. So we are gradually surrendering ourselves, gradually surrendering our autonomy little bit by little bit. And so the kinds of choices that we might want to make are increasingly being determined by algorithms that we don't understand. What book are you going to read next? Oh, Amazon suggests, here's a book that you might want to read. You read this book, you might want to read this book, right? Then you order like a toilet seat from Amazon. Oh, you enjoy this toilet seat? You might enjoy this toilet seat. Right? They're not very intelligent, right? They're called artificial intelligence, but they're not all that intelligent. Right? So what books you read, and of course that shapes so much about who you are, right? I mean, it's not a small thing. Right? What books you choose to read. I mean, just take that one example. Right? That shapes the ideas, the things that you think about, the kind of knowledge that you have. Or meditation, right? Another interesting one, right? So now, these days, if we want to learn to meditate, you get an app. Right? So how many people here use meditation apps? Don't be ashamed. Nothing to be ashamed of. Who uses meditation apps? Put up your hands, yeah. You should all be ashamed of yourselves. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. I did that just for a cheap laugh. I'm sorry. But, but right, so you use meditation. And I've never used a meditation app, but are they good? Yeah, they're all right? Yeah, and what do they do? They like give you a timer, some guided meditation, things like that. Is that right? Yeah, guided ones, so you can choose like different kinds of meditation. Yeah. So they have noises. Okay. That's good. So meditation apps, right? Don't you think it's a bit weird that you're trusting your spiritual development to an app? Right? I mean, that's what you're doing, right? You're saying, you're like ascending to the mountain and bowing down and saying, "Oh Guru, guide me, wise one." Right? That's what we're doing. Yeah. In the past, if you wanted to learn meditation, you go to a temple or you go to some ashram or something like that, and you'd ask somebody who knew about meditation. Now it's from an app. I mean. I work in the digital sphere, so why I think about these things. I build a website sort of central, and we work with programmers all the time. So I don't think these technologies are bad per se, but I think that we really need to think carefully and much more critically about how we're using them and how we're applying them. And there are a lot of the ways that we use technologies now that we just shouldn't do. Yeah, absolutely shouldn't do. I mean, we should never have voting on digital platforms. Absolutely not. It's a disaster. Yeah? There are certain things that should not be digitized. So we go to this, we choose this app, and we want to manage our anger. You see, I'm gradually working all of the topics into it. Huh? You can do it. Yeah. All right. I'm angry. I want to figure out this thing. So you get this app and you're like, oh, come on, it's downloading so slowly. You gotta start working. I want to manage my anger. Right? I mean, the technology itself is one of the biggest sources of anger and frustration. And the faster everything goes, the easier it is for us to get angry, right? I mean, when I was in India years ago, we were on one of the pilgrimages, and we were driving across the country in India, and just in the middle of nowhere, just rice paddies and stuff around, and there's a traffic jam, right? And there's just trucks lined up to the horizon. What do you do, right? I mean, someone's driving a camel train across the road or something like that, right? So all the truck drivers are there for hours. They just get out of their trucks, light a fire, make some chai, start cooking some chapatis. They're fine, right? Whereas if we're like the more we get things, the more you expect them, right? And again, that's how addiction works, right? We are addicts. And you think about the way drug addiction works, it's the same thing. You have that first hit and it's so powerful, and every hit after that it's a little bit less and a little bit less, until finally you don't get anything out of it. You just want to stay normal, and there's more and more and more just to live and just to get by. Yeah? And you feel yourself going down and you know you should get off, but you just can't. How do you do that? How do you quit Facebook? You should all delete Facebook.
Yay! Okay. Who here has no Facebook account? Excellent. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. So the rest of you know you're bad. Right? So delete Facebook. Just get rid of it. Why are you giving all your data to Mark Zuckerberg? He asked the same question. You know, he said that when he was starting Facebook, there was a message that he put around that got spread around a number of years ago. When he started Facebook, this is what he said. He shared to someone, he said, "Oh, I started this thing called the Facebook." He said, "All these stupid people, they're just giving me all their data. Why are they doing that? Idiots. They must trust me or something." Huh? That's what he said. Why are you giving him your data? I don't know. So you look at this thing and you get the app going, and then, okay, so you scroll through. I guess you find like a anger managing meditation. Okay, so maybe metta or something like that. It's good, so you can play that. That can help you. So it can help you with those things. Imagine what it's going to be like when, you know, at the moment where, you know, we started out using keyboards and mouses and now we have touch screens. And then sort of the next, now we have voice, right? So that's another level of creepy, right? Who has like Alexa or Google Home or these kinds of things in their house? Yeah? Not many, actually. Interesting, yeah? So these things, I don't know, they seem pretty creepy to me. Right? These things listening to you all the time. Yeah. All kinds of, are you comfortable with having a computer listen to all of your conversations? Every time you have an argument with your partner? Right? Everything that your kids are saying? Right? And it's not only that, but it's also like what happens when guests come. Like you might say, "I don't care if it's recording everything I say," but you have guests come around to your home. Are they comfortable to have everything they say recorded? But it's not being recorded and shared. Yeah, sure. We can trust you. Okay, so then that's a voice, and then it'll be, and then our wearables, so that's another level, and then soon it'll be in your mind, it'll be in your brain, and everything that you think. But one thing I think is interesting to think about is like when we control computers with our brains, how do you actually do that? How do you control a computer with your mind? Because our minds are so out of control, right? Yeah? This is one of the reasons why they want to do that, right? Because it removes that impulse control. Right? Just a thought, and you can buy stuff. Yeah? So imagine you can use these things with your mind. So then the app would be embedded in the brain reading software. Okay? So when you get angry, you won't have to download an app to say, "I'm going to do an anger meditation." You get angry and it'll say to you, "Oh, looks like you're feeling a bit upset. Would you like to try a 5-minute metta meditation?" Right? Yeah? "No, I don't." Yeah? Again, this is all these things exist, right? The brain reading things, meditation. Things that you can buy brain reading devices, and you can buy meditation apps for those brain reading devices to use them to help train your meditation. I've never used it, but if you get one or you want to try it, then let me know what it's like. So each time we do these things, the important thing, one of the things to remember is that we're giving things away to behind a curtain, and we don't know what's happening behind the curtain, and we never know what's happening behind that curtain. And how has this happened? And what's the root problem at the core of all of these things? Why do people behave in this way? Why haven't we built this world that operates in this way? And because I work with programmers a lot, and I'm interested in that kind of area. One of the things that I've noticed, and one of the things that I think is at the root of all of these problems, is that programmers have this idea that what they are doing is neutral. They believe that code is objective. Right? It's just if then.
right? If this, then that. It's just logic, right? And so they're working in this kind of hyper-objective world that's just dealing with truth, with off and on, right? One and zero. So they're not ethically responsible for any of the results of that work. Yeah? They're just dealing with ones and zeros. Yeah? And so this idea that code is neutral. But the reality is that code is driven by desire. That's the reality. Every single line of code in every program all over the world exists for one reason and one reason only, because someone wanted it. Someone chose to write that code. It comes from desire. And so the reason that the digital world that we have built is like the way it is now is because we wanted it to be that way. Yeah? It comes from desire, whether us or somebody wanted it to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. Right? It's not inevitable. It's just what we've chosen because of what satisfies people's desires. And I think that this is a conceit that fuels programming and fuels that digital evolution. You know, if you look at the way that people talk, say the people who built something like Twitter, right? For them, it's just neutral. It's just a platform. They just wanted to build a place that people could exchange short messages with each other. Yeah? So in their minds, it's just neutral. And the fact that there's so much toxicity and so many horrifying things that happened on Twitter, it's nothing to do with them. Right? So again, this is that conceit. There's no taking responsibility for your actions. Yeah? Because the programmers, the ones who create it, are so distant from it. So I think that, you know, the digital world is a reality. Obviously, technology is here. It's not going back. And there are many good sides to it. I don't want to suggest by what I've talked about today that there are no good sides to it. Obviously, there are. But we have become more conscious, and I think we need to become more conscious about what kinds of choices that we're making in the digital realm. And we should, I think, be very cautious before uploading any more of ourselves anywhere. Yeah, and start asking yourself, is this really necessary? Yeah? Should I perhaps explore this thing called real life a little bit? You know, do I should I actually meet some real people, yeah, and spend a little bit more time in reality? And there are genuine things that the internet is useful for, and so on. But the more and more I go on, to be honest, the more and more I think that a computer or a computing device is something that should sit in one place. And you should walk over to it, turn it on, use it for what you want to use it for, and then turn it off, and then walk away from it. Yeah? I think that's the most useful kind of computing device. Apart from maybe a few specialized uses, but for most of us, I think that's the best way to use it. So we should have some kind of control and think carefully before you start letting go or uploading parts of yourself. Because you don't know how long, because you won't know what the implications are until it's too late. And so what everyone thinks, oh, it doesn't matter, it's only a little thing, it's only a little post, I don't care if people know, all of these things. But you don't know until it's too late, and it's not necessarily going to affect you. Right? It also can easily affect other people in ways that might be harmful to them. And there are also many examples of this kind of thing. So it's not just you. We're contributing to a world where these things become, they become essential, or they become required gradually, little bit by little bit. So anyway, so that's my talk for this evening, and I covered a few topics here. I didn't get around to reincarnation, I apologise, but we talked a bit about uploading yourself, maybe that covered a little bit. We did talk about not self a bit. We did talk about anger management and addiction and big data and technology and spirituality a bit. So I managed to get a few of them in. And so that's my talk for you this evening. Do we have any time? Is there any time for questions? Questions on the internet, of course. All right? Before we have the question on the internet, we have one for the audience. Please, yes. Lady with the hand up.
Thank you for your very interesting talk and your wonderful meditation. I don't have any technology apps. I don't even have a mobile phone because my body actually gets sick around mobile phones.
Uh-huh.
And technology. I mean, I have, you know, a landline and I can use the computers and things, but my body says no. So does that mean I'm safe? That there's no data on me anywhere?
Not at all. No, because it's what everybody else has, you know? And we're all part of that same world and that same system, yeah? So you can't really opt out.
Mm.
Yeah.
What a shame. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Gentleman down the front requires a microphone. Or if you can just...
Hello.
Hey.
Thanks for your talk. I live in Hong Kong, so I'm generally watching this on YouTube.
Okay.
So it's awesome to be here live.
Excellent.
Thank you for your talk. I teach big data, so thank you for that talk. I'm going to use it in my class.
Okay.
I have a question on space, kind of related to the question the gentleman asked there earlier.
Yeah.
So you said space is not...
Space is relative, not
relative
absolute. Yeah.
Okay. But in the stomach, there is no space. You only create space if you eat less, right? And so I thought it can exist in isolation. So if you could kind of elaborate.
Well, okay. So there's two basic concepts of space. So there's one idea that space is kind of an absolute thing within which everything happens, right? And then there's the idea that space is merely the distance between, the gap between other things. Yeah, so it's like a relative idea of space. And in science, those two ideas have been around, but these days in science, I think it's generally acknowledged that there's no such thing as absolute space. So when you have like a big bang or something, the universe is wrapped up there. It's not like the universe is there and then space is outside it, right? Space is only created when the universe expands. Yeah? And so the Buddha had that same idea of space, that space is only a relative thing which is defined by what's the space between. Yeah, but this was a philosophical discussion which was had in ancient India. Different Buddhist schools had different interpretations on it. Yeah, but that's the understanding from the early suttas. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Do we have any on the iPad? Or were people too ashamed to do anything? None today? Okay. So any more questions? If not, no? I think we're approaching time, so we should maybe wrap up. So let's finish by paying respects to the Triple Gem.